Bar.
Hi, this is Jeff.
And Gretchen.
And you're listening to This and That Podcast with Jeff and Gretchen, show number 82. Ooh. Yeah, you know, but at the rate that we're going,
we may hit 100
by the time we retire. Retire from the podcasting business.
At 100. There you go.
Yeah, it's a tough business, but we'll be able to tell our kids how we work the podcasting minds.
We worked the microphone.
We worked the microphones.
We haven't been working it much since February 9th.
And I don't know about you, but my hourly pay for this, pretty dismal. The man has just got us by the barrel. The damn man. So how are you? It's been a while since we podcasted.
No, it's been since February. Lots of stuff happening in the world.
Lots of bad stuff is happening in the world.
Bad stuff, yeah. You're right, it's bad stuff. But we don't want to dwell too much on bad stuff. But
no, we don't. So what's been...
But I'm sure we have some enlightening comments on some of the bad stuff. You want to hear something ironic? We live here in Texas, and you know, we are in Republican country, I've got to say. You know, there's just... But I was at the local arts and crafts festival yesterday called the Cottonwood Festival in Richardson, right? So I go looking at a jewelry booth. The guy who makes handmade jewelry from Austin. And the woman next to me is asking him, why doesn't he do more in gold? He had some rings and jewelry that were silver and gold combined. And she says to him, well, why don't you do more in gold? And he says, well, the price of gold has just skyrocketed. And if I did a lot more in gold, the jewelry would be, you know, three times as expensive. And it's not so, you know, not wouldn't sell right now. And she said, well, as soon as we're done with this Obama thing, everything will go back to normal.
You know,
the Obama thing.
You know, and they all get it from watching way too much TV and these one-sided goofies, silly people
on TV. Last time I checked, I didn't realize how much Obama controlled the price of gold. I thought that was sort of...
They don't even know what they're talking about.
They don't know what they're talking about.
They want something to blame.
Oh, but it just so permeates. And then I was at a flea market also in the heart of Texas over Easter. And again, just the people just making everyday conversation. I was with a friend from California, and as soon as he said he was from California, the vendors would go, oh, all those problems out there, you know, those are all Obama's problems. Forgetting that Governor Schwarzenegger is a Republican governor.
Right.
And, you know, oh, just Obama just created that disaster out there. Oh,
well,
Lord.
You know, Hollywood is out in California.
Everything.
All those damn Hollywood liberals.
They all created this problem. Oh, my God. So I just thought that was interesting to share, that I didn't realize that Obama had driven up the price of gold and created all of California's woes.
He's very powerful, isn't he? Who'd have thunk it?
Who'd have thunk it? Yeah. In meantime, Lloyd Blankfein, you know, have you heard his name lately? He's the head of Goldman Sachs. He took in $68 million last year.
Yeah, they're
How'd
doing
you
a good
do
business.
Compared to 68 mil, huh?
Well, that's the funny thing, too. And you wonder about the oil spill, if BP is even going to take a hit on this.
No.
I mean,
yeah,
you know.
They're going to take a hit, and how big is the hit going to be? You know, Exxon, I just realized, you know, Exxon still reports the most profitable corporation in the United States, if not the world. And yet, they, you know, had 4 years of Exxon Valdez cleanup in 1989 and lawsuits. And yet, they're still... But, you know, here it is in, you know, 2010, and they're still just as profitable.
Well, maybe we should just lead off with talking about the oil spill a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just such a big looming disaster, such an awful thing. And I think the only good thing I can think that could come out of this is a renewed conversation about our dependency on
oil.
On oil in general. I mean, it's, you know.
Or if you're Sarah Palin, it's spill, baby, spill. It's the new motto. Sorry about that. But I mean, to honestly say, in light of this, that we shouldn't change our policy on oil drilling offshore, please, you've got to have your head up your ass, which is what she was recently saying. At least, you know, Charlie Crist in Florida is now saying, yeah, we've got to stop thinking about this because it's all floating his direction.
But I mean, Obama's got a little egg on his face too, because wasn't it just 2 or 3 weeks when he said, we need to do this as part of our whole program.
He didn't say we're stopping. We're putting the whole policy on hold.
Well, yeah, they have to figure out what caused this problem. And
the poor 11 guys that died. I mean, it was a horrible disaster. But there's no end in sight. And apparently, I heard today, they've thrown everything they've got at it. And there's no way to stop it other than drilling another well.
I was looking for, you know, how that midweek they had talked about burning it.
Yeah.
But I hadn't seen anything updated. I know they were testing some things.
Oh, it worked, except it's too windy.
Oh, really?
It's too windy and too choppy to continue burning. Burning will work, but they can't drag it offshore because the wind and the waves are now going the other direction than they were earlier in the week, and they will resume that. They did say it worked, as ridiculous as it sounds. They said it worked, but right now the conditions aren't favorable.
Well, I thought this is interesting, too. On Friday, crews worked through Friday night to dispense 3,000 gallons of subsurface dispersant. Now, what this subsurface dispersant is, first of all, I'll say that three times real fast.
Subsurface dispersant.
But initial tests of this dispersant released near the wellhead suggested that the method could significantly mitigate the problem. Let's see here. What it does is it attaches themselves to underwater concentrations of oil. So it's not a surface thing at all. It's underwater, causing it to sink to the bottom and dissipate.
Mm-hmm.
So while the dispersants can help dissipate oil slicks and help birds and other land-based or water surface wildlife, the chemicals can hurt fish and other underwater species. So, you know, there's no perfect solution out there. I mean, this is just a crumb-bum problem. But I was also looking, I was curious about, you know, how, not to sound selfish, but how does this affect me? And by me, I mean us, you know?
You mean the fish, you mean...
I mean generally.
People in the United States who eat the product that comes out of this region?
Well, I saw one economic impact is on the fisheries down there, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And most of that is shrimp.
Oysters,
and there was another one too. I can't remember what it was. So those obviously may go up in cost.
Mm-hmm.
But they said that the price of the gasoline won't make a difference, and it won't make a difference to the oil industry. I just ran some numbers here. So far, this has spilled 1.6 million barrels, and it's still gushing at about 5,000 barrels a day. Now, to put that into context, 1.6 billion barrels, it's a huge amount. Obviously, it's the biggest spill ever. But the U.S. alone in one day uses 19.6 million. So what we've lost is, maybe an hour or two?
An hour's worth of oil.
Yeah, an hour's worth of oil or so. So,
wow.
So in terms of like the industry and prices going up and all that, mm-hmm. this is nothing. It really is
but
nothing.
But it'll still be an excuse. Actually,
yeah. It's huge political,
right.
And local economic impacts.
And BP's going to have to recoup their cost.
Yeah.
And this will affect everybody else drilling because they're trying to make sure that the caps they have in place, just like this one that failed at the bottom of the ocean floor, aren't going to happen again if it does it again. So this affects everybody in the oil industry.
But the poor folks down in Louisiana and the Gulf Coast, I mean,
just another whammy.
Hit. And this is going to hit tourism, they said, and obviously the fishing industry. And who knows what other, all the things that are related to those.
It heads to Florida and it might head into the Atlantic.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's a shame. It's too bad.
It'll be interesting to see the reasons why this happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because Obama, when he was talking about how we wanted to do more of this as part of the whole overall policy, said it's been proven that oil drills have great records and great technology. And then 3 weeks later,
oops.
So I heard one person on the radio saying, well, this is a conspiracy done by people who don't want oil drilling offshore. They blew it up, you know.
I think Limbaugh said that, right? Didn't he?
Okay, that's what I heard somebody say. Limbaugh said
attributed to that. Yes. Yeah, he's taking too much OxyContin still.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I can't imagine a worse place for it to happen, except possibly off the coast of California.
Well, that's,
because there's the other beautiful region that also, and that's the fifth largest economy in the world. So, this was a pretty bad place. And when they compared to the Exxon Valdez spill, they said that was a different type of oil, and it was confined to cold weather in a bay that was really not occupied by humans.
Oh.
I mean, it was a horrible wildlife disaster,
right.
And it did take 4 years for the environment to come back, and a pretty big cleanup effort. But it wasn't like there were a lot of people, 100 miles offshore, going to be impacted by it. Whereas this one is, including the marshes and the grasses. If the grasses die, the shrimp live there. The birds feed there, and there's something about the erosion of the soil. That's what it is.
It's the erosion
of the soil. It could really impact the shape of the coast.
Got it.
If the grasses all die.
Well, it makes sense. I guess it makes sense. Mm-hmm. I looking through the news, I couldn't find anything that's, well, first of all, they said this would be about a 2 month cleanup or whatever cleanup, however they define cleanup, two months until potentially it's not even spilling any more oil.
Oh, you mean just to get it to stop 2 months after it stops?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then I haven't seen anything that's saying the impact of this will be, or to bring the environment back to where it was. Mm-hmm. It's a decades long process.
Yeah.
So this is bad.
It's bad. You know what else was, well.
And totally a man-made disaster, yeah, as opposed to some of the other things that we've had lately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was bad. And the car bomb in Times Square was bad. And the.
Yeah, but it didn't go. I didn't follow that up. It didn't go off, right? They just found it.
No, it didn't go off. They found it.
That's amazing to me. A, that it doesn't happen more often. B, that there is one and it doesn't go off. What's the matter with these people?
Well,
I mean, really?
Did you hear Bloomberg described it as amateurish? So it sounds to me like the wiring was a little. They didn't have a really good degree in engineering.
So why they have such good experts at this stuff? Uh-huh. Why don't they attack New York like this? It'd be so easy. It just amazes me that this doesn't happen.
Well, I did hear the coverage last night, which I thought was interesting. Since September 11th, 01, there's been 10 attacks in New York. Most of them foiled.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. 10 attacks on the city of New York.
Wow.
So,
Well, foiled by our government, see?
See, foiled
we're
by
doing,
the police. The
government
doing,
can do some stuff.
Right.
Can do
yeah.
some things right.
Yeah. Oh, and also, since we haven't spoken for a while, Toyota paid a record fine in $16 million for not telling us poor little people that they were aware of a problem with their cars accelerating.
I know.
And had to recall 8 million of them. And if there were, there's hundreds of lawsuits pending now and a lot of class action lawsuits. But apparently they knew for a fact in September, they told their European counterparts in September that they were going to recall, but they didn't bother to tell the United States until January. And so those, if you had a death in those 3 months, I think you have a slam dunk case against Toyota.
Yeah, no kidding.
How could you not have notified?
Right.
So they paid the $16.4 million fine, and who knows how long it'll take them to pay up too. I mean, that was to go from the number one safest car to the most questionable car.
Yeah.
Something pretty bad happened at Toyota.
Man, oh man. I will say that. Mm-hmm. Well, it's spring has sprung. And you know, I find, I have a little perspective on the seasons.
Like allergy season?
Yeah, well, spring is to me just the most amazing season. And you know, everything just starts growing and blossoming and bugs and animals are more, you know, all around. I had a dead possum. Did I tell you about this?
No.
I can't remember. Eric was going to take a shower in my guest bathroom and opened up the shower curtain and there lies a poor little dead baby possum.
Aww.
Yeah. How it got there, I don't know, you know? I mean, there's possums around the neighborhood and so forth, but
In the shower, huh?
In the shower, and it looked like it had tried. You could see little muddy paws going up the shower curtain, but, you know,
aww,
it was like. And then I kind of got online, and there's been some findings of rats, possums, things like that in toilets.
Really?
Yeah, and you don't think of it. You think, well, how could that happen? How could you go through these sewer pipes and so forth? Well, I think what most people don't really understand is that sewer pipes are empty.
Empty, you're right.
The only bit between the toilet and the sewer pipe that's water is only, what, a couple, 3 feet. I mean, there's not much water.
Right,
you can make
right.
it pretty easily.
Right, right.
So in a way, it does. So again, so kind of surprised it doesn't happen more often.
Yeah,
you know?
Right, yeah. Well,
but
that's interesting.
I had my sewer pipe recently.
Redone.
Totally redone. So,
yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
Wow, that's freaky.
Freaky
speaking
stuff.
Of spring, though, I mean, allergies across the country. Oh, my God.
Pollen. Have you seen the pollen this year? I mean, you can just see it.
Pollen.
You can just see it, and those who are sensitive to it can feel it.
God.
It is unbelievable.
It's unbelievable.
I've never seen it. You wash your car. And your car 2 days later is full of pollen.
Yeah, covered with yellow dust.
I've never seen it this bad.
Mm-hmm. Fine yellow dust. I hope it ends soon because every day
is it driving you nuts?
Taking Claritin. It's so unbelievable.
I'm lucky. Knock on, where's the wood?
Right here.
Give me your head.
Right there. There's the wood.
There's the wood. I'm lucky. But I find spring just to be a fascinating season and beautiful. And in Texas, I will have to say it is the most beautiful season.
Yeah,
everything's green. Pretty. The flowers are around.
Mm-hmm. It's the perfect prettiest season. All the flowers are out. Yeah.
I
honeysuckle's blooming. Oh, yes. Just gorgeous bluebonnets.
I tend to enjoy fall better because I think you got football, you got crisp weather, you have the fall colors. But Dallas doesn't really have typically a very pretty fall.
Pretty fall, yeah. Doesn't I mean,
this
change
is, this is definitely Dallas's season. Pretty season. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and it seems to have changed overnight almost. You wake up one it's day amazing. And all of a sudden it's green.
I just
it goes
find
from brown to green in a very short period of time.
It's a phenomenal mm-hmm. season. You know, it's
yep.
It's because every day something is different. Something's blossoming or blooming or mm-hmm. whatever.
Yep. That is true. So you're going to spend any time in Arizona this spring?
As long as my papers are in line.
Oh, my God. Arizona. What are we going to do with you?
They're getting to be a bad name.
Holy cow. Well, they had to change their tune yesterday. You probably heard that they revamped the law over the weekend. Because
no, I didn't see that.
Yeah, they did. They rewrote it, and I wanted to actually get the words right because it was it's very specific. Let me see. Where is it? They are now saying that, well, here it is. Old Jan Brewer, thank you very much. She's now saying she's saying that racial profiling is completely illegal, and the new revisions definitely enforce that. Right now, the law as it was passed says local, state, and law enforcement officers question people about their immigration status if there is reason to suspect they are in the country illegally. And it makes it a crime to be in the United States illegally, which it already is on the books that it is right. a crime to be in right. the United States illegally. It's been on the books for 58 years. It follows now, the change says that questions of immigration status follows a law enforcement officer stopping, detaining, or arresting a person while enforcing another law. Before it had said you have to have contact with the police. Now it says that they have to be in the act of enforcing another law when they make this question of you. But one of the very first of the three lawsuits that were filed Thursday of this week is by a police officer. And they're saying that these changes don't really make any difference to them. They're still going to proceed, and that they think that this is – so many people are saying this is a federal issue, not a state issue, but lack of the federal government actually cracking down on the law that is on the books.
What is the law that's on the books?
The law on the books does say that you aren't allowed to be here illegally.
Right.
And it does say that you are supposed to have documents.
Gotcha.
But since nobody is enforcing it, I would say, though, that the number of border patrols has increased threefold in the last, I think it was 10 years. And the number of people coming here in the United States has decreased. I mean, illegally trying to come here has decreased. The crime rate in Arizona, it has been down over the last 10 years. And police are really divided about this too, especially police in Arizona. They don't really, some of them want to enforce it and some of them don't want to touch it. They have other things they want to worry about, really violent crime. It is the abduction capital of the United States right now.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, more missing persons in Phoenix and Arizona. And now there's been a backlash. There's a lot of people who want to boycott Arizona.
Right.
Between
right.
the truckers and the conventions and the baseball team and the, and yesterday there were a lot of rallies in a lot of different cities. I heard between 25,000 and 100,000 in Dallas alone. All over the country. But supposedly the majority of the country supports the Arizona law, which I find that, but that's what the polls show. So it's a tough topic. We definitely need a policy. It's been footballed around for years. Because it's hard, nobody wants to deal with it.
It's not politics. No matter what you stake out, it's not going to be politically
correct. It's not
going to
be politically correct, right, for somebody. Somebody is going to be right. upset. I mean, even any kind of path to amnesty, any kind of, right. leniency for
you
people who are here.
Put any solutions out there at all, someone's going to criticize you
right.
for it.
Yeah.
So don't like it. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just an ucky situation. And John McCain and his daughter are divided on it too.
Really?
Yeah, John defended the governor's decision to sign it, but he stopped short of saying he supported the law as it was written. Because when he was campaigning, he backed comprehensive immigration reform and reminded critics that these are all God's children. And now he's calling for thousands of troops to guard the border. And Megan McCain has said that she understands how this law came into existence, but she doesn't support it. But then again, she's not running for election. There's no winners in the fight over the new law, and it's has become so politicized that she doubts a solution will be found. And then she said, Latinos have yet another reason to distrust the Republican Party. So,
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the interesting potential political fallout, is that Republicans are already not doing well with the Hispanic vote. The Hispanic vote clearly in a number of states, especially southern states, is becoming more and more important.
Think
and this doesn't seem like a very wise... I mean, not that the Republican Party is doing this, but they must be kind of shitting their pants a little bit.
Yeah, some of them have come out to say this wasn't a smart move.
Yeah.
Some of them have been out there to say, wow, this was...
Yeah.
Maybe not what we want to do, but it does need to be addressed. So hopefully, with all this rancor, it'll go to the courts. The courts will say yes or no, and then it'll actually get spur a real policy.
You know,
that might be the good that'll come out of it.
Right, maybe. Mm-hmm. Well, I saw this little tidbit in the news a couple weeks ago, and I don't know, it kind of surprised me a little bit. iTunes now is accounts for one quarter, 25% for all you mathematicians out there.
One quarter
of all United States music sales. So
iTunes does. Wow.
So they're doing well. Now, in the same article, and I should have done...
And how old is iTunes? What, 8 years old? 7 years? I mean, it's not very
that old.
Yeah. Like 6 years old, and it's already...
Probably 5 or 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It is the way of distributing music, it looks like. And this article, and I should have done more research, but I, always wait till the last minute, because this article says it's conflicting. It said, overall, music sales fell by more than $1 billion last year. And I highlighted that because I thought, wow, I got to do some more research. $1 billion it lost? But then it goes on to say total music sales in the U.S. only rose by 1.1% over the previous year. So I'm like, huh? This is literally in the same paragraph. So question my sources. I know. I'm not a reporter. I should have done more research. Anyways, let's assume that overall music sales in the U.S. rose by 1.1%. That sounds more reasonable than they lost $1 billion in 1 year. But even so, what they, according to some industry and analysts, they said, well, 1.1% growth is really like no growth. And I think they're citing because there's more people in the pool and so forth. But the record industry now, this is what's interesting to me. The record industry is actually looking to iTunes now to save their own business. One executive is quoted as saying that an iTunes subscription service might be just the thing to get people interested in buying music again. Now, I have long predicted this. And, it's interesting as we get more into cloud computing and this idea that, you can have files, music, one, whatever, in other places, but it seems kind of transparent to you on your computer, kind of like Yahoo Mail in a way. That really, even buying music just seems silly to me in the long run. I think we'll be buying, there's businesses out there now we can buy subscription plans, but wouldn't you rather have just a virtual iTunes that you log in anytime, any music is there whenever, and you just have a monthly fee for it, and anything you ever want is right there, and you can play it just like iTunes now. Is there really any reason to own music? It seems like a business that's just going away by the nature of how people want to consume this stuff.
It's kind of like XM and Sirius, only down to the song level as opposed to the category level.
Yeah, because you can't choose what you're going to listen to on XM and Sirius.
I can pick a genre.
You can pick a genre, but you can't pick a music.
I can pick all Bruce Springsteen songs.
Sure.
Because there is a Springsteen channel, right?
Right.
But I can't pick the one I want to hear at that time.
Right.
But, I mean, that seems, what you're saying seems logical, that you should be able to just subscribe to the library of music and listen to what you want, as long as you want.
Right.
You know.
So how, and that's pretty logical. I mean, I don't think that's technologically difficult. I think most people get it, and I think most people understand that that's probably the way most of us want to consume. Now, I did hear an NPR article where they talked about one guy who just loves collecting albums. and CDs and stuff. And, you know, there's always going to be those people out there. It's like the people that have rows and rows and stacks of DVDs at their homes because they just love that. Well, I own maybe 10 of my favorite movies, but otherwise I don't want to own them. I just want to borrow them for a little while. Right. And eventually I just want to stream them and consume them and have them be gone. So there'll always be the percentage of people that will like be collectors, but that percentage will go down as it just simply becomes unnecessary.
Right. Kind of like books. Do you think books are going to be gone?
Books are a little bit more of a difficult monster. I mean, yeah, I have the Kindle and I'll probably get an iPad eventually. And, you know, I still buy books too.
But the younger generation now, there are classrooms that just have computers.
Right. No textbooks.
And now there are even children's classic books, you know, the things that we grew up with, Where the Wild Things Are. Those books are now in a format that little kids can see.
Right.
That will they ever really want to hold a book in two generations now?
I don't know. You know, I think it's slower than music to me is obvious. Movies to me are obvious. Books are just less obvious. There's so many people out there that just say there's a certain, I mean, there's no, what's the word I'm looking for, visceral enjoyment of holding a book and curling up in a corner versus holding a Kindle. And I get it. I get that. I think the Kindle's good for some things. Magazine subscriptions, for example, is a great, great way to use the Kindle. No reason to distribute all that paper around, and it's something you throw away anyways. People like to have, you know, you saw my bookshelves. Yeah, I just bought new bookshelves. I like having books in there. They look nice. And now going on a trip, I like to take the Kindle where I have access to all the books, you know, lots of books. But I don't know. Maybe we'll raise generations in the next two or three generations. But I don't think it goes away as fast as people who own CDs. CDs, I get no visceral. In fact, I feel... I gotta undo the plastic.
No, the plastic is so annoying.
What do I do with the freaking CD? All I do is import it into iTunes and then it's gone.
Right.
So that's a pain in the ass. There's no visceral enjoyment of having CDs.
So you'd prefer not to have the CD now and just download the whole album from.
I don't even want to download it though. I don't want to download it. I just want it available online. You know?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, that makes sense.
Yeah.
It does make sense. Yeah.
So anyway, I thought that was pretty interesting. iTunes is doing a good business. Of course, you know, record industries are saying, well, maybe we need to leverage iTunes. But I think the question becomes how. They still want to make music and promote artists. They're in a way, I think, in an old business. And how does a new band come up, you know? You place their album in this great vast Library of Congress thing. And how do you find?
But
I guess maybe the record companies, instead of producing music, maybe they end up being advertising and nurturing artists like they do today, and just getting artists noticed, because then you know, you can certainly track how those things are played, and then maybe they get paid that way. So maybe that's the model of the future. I'm just thinking aloud here.
Right.
That makes a lot more sense. And you know, even production, people can produce at home now pretty damn well.
Yes.
You sort of don't need the big studios
look at this
that much anymore.
Podcast quality.
Oh yeah, right. Wow, what's that noise? It must be a truck outside talking about quality.
But you
okay,
have,
maybe you do need the studios. I take that back.
But you have a studio here. I mean, if you insulated the whole room, you'd
no,
be
sure,
fine.
Sure,
you know?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, the production skills are skills that do take time and expertise and all that. And, and I've climbed that learning curve to some extent, but it's also the tools are making it a little bit easier.
Yep.
You have to be a little bit less good than you used to be, quite frankly. So,
Take it from a geek. A geek who understands it.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of geeks, here's one of the number one geeks in the world, astrophysicist Stephen Hawking. Right?
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Did you hear what he said this week about extraterrestrials?
Oh, I think I saw a headline, but I didn't read it.
He is warning us of the danger of speaking to space aliens because he's talking common sense. He's the most famous living scientist, and he speculates that trying to interact directly with an ET might pose a huge risk for Earthlings. This is what he's saying.
Yeah, I did see something
on a new 4-part documentary called Into the Universe with Stephen Hawking. And so he's saying, to his mathematical brain, the numbers alone make thinking about aliens perfectly rational. The real challenge is to work out what aliens might actually be like. And then they talked to some other people who actually spend their whole life at the like the SETI Institute. And SETI means the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence.
Gotcha.
Right? Yep. I'm a geek too. And this guy's saying when you search for aliens, it's like listening to a radio station. You tune into your favorite DJ, but he doesn't know you've tuned them in. So there's no danger in searching for the extraterrestrials. But Hawken is saying... he thinks that they might set their sights on Earth for their own purposes. I imagine they might exist in massive ships, having used up all the resources from their home planet. Such advanced nomads would look to conquer and colonize whatever planets they can reach.
This, said Hawkins after seeing 4th of July, the movie.
Right. Or after seeing District 9. I mean, there are so many things
it's
you can look at.
It's all the same theme.
Right.
But I did see one quote from this, now that you know it rings familiar. He sort of said... I don't know why we assume they're going to be friendly.
That's right.
And want contact.
That's right. I guess absolutely. But the possibility of life outside of our earthly confines has increased in recent years with the discovery, I didn't know this, 450 planets in orbits around faraway stars. Now we know there are billions of galaxies, and each galaxy is made up of hundreds of millions of suns. I mean, when you look at the mind-boggling statistics there. So he completely supports space exploration. He's not saying he's anti-against it. But this was the best quote. If aliens ever visit us, I think the outcome would be much as when Christopher Columbus first landed in America, which didn't turn out very well for the Native Americans.
Wow.
Go Stephen.
Wow, good.
What an interesting analogy, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, they would not come in peace.
I mean, and you can see, you know, with the oil spill and the nuclear weapons and, you know, the global warming, whether you believe it or not, you can see that we potentially could ruin our resources too, and that we might want
to
go outside
and wasn't that
continue
the whole, that was
live.
The whole point of Avatar too, is they were there seeking that
right.
that exquisitely expensive mm-hmm. whatever chemical or whatever that they had
right.
to mine it was under or the, and they
right.
needed to do it
right.
So yeah, that was sort of the same philosophy there.
It's all about resources, not like you want to say,
finite
hey, you're
resources.
In the universe too.
That's right.
So are we.
Let's be friends.
We should do lunch. Talk about, you know, where we come from.
That's right. Let's see. Let's get together and talk about God or who our genetic dad is, you know, or who made us up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, you want some resource from us?
Yeah. Let's borrow and swap.
Your ladies are looking fine, by the way.
Oh, I like that one-eyed man.
The two-head thing is just working for me. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess when you look at it that way, they're probably not going to come in peace if they are going to come.
No, they spent a lot of money to come here.
Yeah, they spent a lot of time and energy.
Yeah.
So.
Well, CNN, well, I saw this in CNN. S. Pellegrino, I think that's the water company.
Yes.
The water.
Mm-hmm. San Pellegrino.
San. Yeah, they just came out with the world's 50 best restaurants.
Oh,
and
okay.
Number one spot is called Noma in Copenhagen, Denmark. And the restaurant is headed by a 32-year-old chef named René Rezepi. And let's see here. He pursues a regional, seasonal agenda that is right on the cutting edge. If it isn't available in the Nordic region, he won't cook it. Which, you know, that makes sense.
Yeah.
The result is a very idiosyncratic style of food that speaks to concerns about the way a global food culture turns our eating experience way a global food culture turns our eating experience is a uniform beige. I don't really understand that quote, so interpret as you will out there.
But then what's he doing, importing Pellegrino water from Italy?
I know, right? Well, that's how he got number one
that's
ranking.
That's how he got number one ranking. He makes an exception for his water.
Exactly.
We're gonna air this water in,
right?
Which makes it, well, I think we've talked about this before, how expensive it is to transport water because it's so heavy,
right?
Especially in a glass bottle.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, after four consecutive years ranked as number one, Spanish restaurant El Bulli, or maybe it's Bulli, takes a seat at number two.
Ooh.
So, however, that won't make it easier to snag a table. Only 8,000 reservations are accepted every year out of reported million requests.
Wow.
So,
wow.
I kind of...
So, what's the highest ranking one in the U.S.?
Well, that's exactly what I kind of looked down.
Where
and
are
there's
we?
Only four in the top 100. The number one is in Chicago, and then three are in New York. So
wow.
The number one that's in Chicago is called, I don't know how to pronounce it. It's either Alinea or Alinea. It opened in 2005. Its head chef, Grant A. Schatz, is known for its preparation and deconstruction of classic flavors. I'm going to get into this a little bit. It intrigued me, so I did a little research. It has included, for example, a peanut butter and jelly composed of a single peel grape still on the stem, encased in peanut butter and wrapped in paper-thin brioche.
Brioche.
Mm-hmm. Brioche. So this restaurant is known to basically come to define the molecular gastronomy movement. Have you heard of that?
No, I have not.
No. So I Googled it.
Molecular gastronomy movement.
I'll have a side order of molecular gastronomic
grapes.
Grapes. One peel grape coming up, sir. That's a little disappointing.
That's $12.
That's a little bit disappointing. So, yeah, the food is just the same food otherwise, but it's just on a molecular level, much smaller now. Molecular gastronomy is a scientific discipline that studies the physical and chemical processes that occur while cooking. Molecular gastronomy seeks to investigate and explain the chemical reasons behind the transformation of ingredients, as well as the social, artistic, and technical components of culinary and gastronomic phenomena in general.
Oh, that's interesting. It's the science of cooking.
Science.
Then. Yeah.
So here's some examples. How ingredients are changed by different cooking methods. How all the senses play their own roles in the appreciation of different kinds of foods. The mechanisms of aroma release and the perceptions of taste and flavor. You know, I can see how that all gets into cooking. It's like, when do you put in the garlic, for example?
Right,
you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, basic mm-hmm. things like that. Mm-hmm. How and why we evolved our particular taste and flavor sense organs and our general food likes and dislikes. How cooking methods affect the eventual flavor and texture of food ingredients. And you take something like that, how cooking methods affect the eventual flavor and texture of food ingredients. Well, that mm-hmm. sounds logical.
Right.
But, you know, it's almost like cooks and cookbooks have come up with, like, their ways of experimenting and doing this, mm-hmm. but never, like, a holistic scientific approach, and I guess that's what the difference is. How new cooking methods might produce improved results of texture and flavor, how our brains interpret the signals from all of our senses to tell us the flavor, and how our enjoyment of food is affected by other influences, our environment, our mood, and how it's presented and who prepares it. Examples, myths debunked through the use of this sort of molecular gastronomy movement. So these are kind of interesting. One thing they discovered is you need to add salt. These are myths that are not true.
Okay.
You need to add salt to water when cooking green vegetables. You don't need to do that. It doesn't do a thing. Searing, this is the most surprising thing because every cookbook I have says this. Searing meat seals in the juices. No, doesn't. So that's interesting, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure you... Sear meat all the time.
I'm trying to think. When's the last time I even seared meat? I'm trying to think, what is searing?
searing is when you cook it on high.
Cook it fast, right?
Fast on high on both sides. You flip it fast.
Right, okay.
Then you slow cook the rest of it.
Oh, okay, got it. Yeah. Okay, all right. Yeah. It's a little pre-cooking quickly.
to seal in the juices.
but
apparently it doesn't.
But apparently they're saying, based on their molecular study of...
Right.
of the grape.
Scientists.
of the grape.
Of the skinless grape. So, yeah, I might have to do some more research on that to see why that is. The cooking time for roast meat depends on the weight. That's not true.
Huh.
Whatever. And this one's kind of boring. When cooking meat stocks, you must start with cold water. Hmm. Okay, that one doesn't really mean that much to me. So the other restaurants in New York, there's a French restaurant in New York called Daniel.
Uh-huh.
That was number eight on the list. Mm-hmm. You've heard of that one?
Yes, I've heard of that one.
Oh, really? Have you mm-hmm. ever been?
No.
Okay.
No.
This one is actually both in Paris. Oh, no. I'm sorry. I saw France and I read New York for some reason. Where are the other New Yorks? I need to flip the page. New York, WD50?
Yes.
Have you heard of that one?
Yes, I've been to that one.
Really? Mm-hmm. What kind of food is it?
It's eclectic American.
Okay.
I mean, aren't they all really?
Yeah, I know,
They're whatever the chef dreams up.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then 11 Madison Park.
Oh, don't know that one.
Okay.
Hmm.
So there you
Interesting.
Go.
Interesting.
Yes.
Wow.
So I just imagine you're a wee little restaurant owner, you know, of a popular restaurant in a big town.
Uh-huh.
You're voted number one restaurant in the world. That's pretty ostentatious stuff.
I doubt that's a little wee restaurant, though.
Well,
if it's even on that list, I doubt it's a little restaurant.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, Copenhagen, that's a pretty cosmopolitan place.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's not like it's in the middle of the boondocks somewhere.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Interesting, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, it would be weird if the number one restaurant wasn't kind of an off the wall place. Yeah. You know? Uh-huh. Nome, Alaska's got the best.
Yeah, exactly.
Best, you know, yeah. Alaskan cuisine.
Like some of the best sushi, I believe, comes from places in Japan.
Sure.
Like, I think
sure.
so. That would probably head up there, what's on their list.
Right, so. Right. Yeah, they're probably, you know, if you segregated this and made best sushi restaurant, because mm-hmm. how do you really compare?
Yeah, how do you compare such different cuisines to each other to determine what's the best?
Right.
You know?
Japan should probably say, hey, wait a minute. Yeah. This isn't fair.
Well, I think the Michelin ratings for years and years, you know, to get the 3 stars, the four diamonds, that,
yeah.
that was pretty amazing. And then chefs would kill themselves if they lost a diamond.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bit extreme.
Yes. Yeah. So I've got a health story that you might find interesting.
Health.
We talk about health a lot. So we know there's 4 really bad things that everybody can do, or if you choose to do it. Drinking excessively, not eating enough fruits and vegetables, failing to exercise, and smoking. Do any of those, and it's been proven that those behaviors are linked to different illnesses and shorten lifespan. However, one study in Norway actually said, what happens if we find people who do all of them? What happens if you do all 4 of those things?
Wow.
Smoke, you drink, you don't eat very well, and you don't exercise.
Yeah.
Okay? And I would
that's
say,
a lot of people
judging from a lot of fat Americans right now, I would say that's probably not all that uncommon, right?
Right.
And if you do one, you probably, it's not uncommon to think that you do others because perhaps you don't even know anything about health consciousness.
Right.
You just aren't educated.
They probably come together to some extent.
Yeah, they probably come together. Well, it turns out if you do all 4, you will shorten your life by more than a decade. I thought that was pretty amazing.
Interesting.
And this study they did, they started it in 1984, and then they looked back on the same group of people 20 years later, and over 1,000 of them had died, and they looked at all the factors on why they died, and the risk of death from cardiovascular disease and cancer was 3 times greater than it was among people who had none of those behaviors. So they had an overall mortality risk comparable to that of a person 12 years older.
Wow.
That was a significant risk,
that
they said.
That is amazing.
And they think that they can actually, you can actually change it just by changing your behavior a little bit. It's not like grueling exercise or restrictive diets. It's just trying to make small changes. And, you know, this first definitive study that actually says that, wow, we can prove that doing these things really can cut your life short.
Wow.
I thought that was interesting.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have a health-related topic as well.
Okay.
This seems to be in the news, you know, every couple years or so, but coffee's back in the news.
What's it doing this time? Is it helping us or hurting us now?
It's helping us.
Okay.
I can't remember what it did last time. But, first of all,
didn't it help headaches or something?
Yeah, I think it did. You take coffee to get over a hangover, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And the old movies.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I remember seeing some old movie where they're pouring coffee down
their
girl's throat and she was too drunk and said to meet somebody or something like that. Anyways, guess what percentage of a human adults? Like monkey adults? Guess what percentage of adults in the United States drink coffee? Regularly.
Oh, that's 70%?
No. I would have guessed that too, though.
Yeah.
It's 54%. It's not as much as I would have thought.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But this is, so the caffeine does stay in your system for 12 hours, but they have shown, and there's a number of studies that have shown this, that coffee drinkers may be at lower risk of liver and colon cancer, type 2 diabetes, and Parkinson's disease. And in 2009, 2 coffee studies suggested that coffee drinking men seem to have a lower risk of advanced or lethal prostate cancer than other men, and middle-aged people who drank moderate amount of coffee, 3 to 5 cups of day, had the lowest risk for dementia and Alzheimer's disease later in life compared to less frequent drinkers. So can coffee drinking keep you to live longer? Maybe. A 2008 study found that women who drank coffee regularly, up to 6 cups a day, were less likely to die of various causes during the study than their non-coffee drinking counterparts. Now, I won't bore you too much about all this, but a lot of this has to do, they think, with some of the antioxidants that are in coffee,
mm-hmm.
you know, that are also in grapes and berries and nuts and things like that, but people just have more coffee than
right.
no stuff.
Right.
So, but there's also what I found even more interesting is they have found, where did I just lose this here? they have found that maybe it's not that, and perhaps it's people who drink coffee have healthier lifestyles. And let me explain. This is a little bit potentially controversial, but what they've found is, let me make sure I can find this.
Maybe people who drink coffee are more type A personalities.
Well, there might be some things. I can't find it now. It didn't make my cut and paste. Anyway, I remember the gist of it. People who made over like $150,000 drank coffee 70 up where you were guessing. It's to the 70 to 75% rate. People who were low income drank coffee at below 50% rate. And there has been studies in the past that have said people who make more money have better health and better lifestyles. They generally exercise, they generally eat better, and so forth and so on. So that's kind of a big causal effect too. It may not be the coffee at all. It may just be what a company
says. Healthier lifestyle. And it just happens lifestyle. To be coffee's one component of it.
Right. Coffee's one indicator of so if if you're in a bar and you want to impress a woman, drink coffee. It'll show her that you've got money in your wallet. Hey, baby.
Ooh, baby.
I'm ordering the tall Grande Verde Venti. I don't want to brag.
If you can speak that language, oh my Lord. It is like a whole other language.
So anyway, it's good news for me because I love my coffee.
You do.
And, you know, any good news? I'm sure in 2 years so it's going to be awful for you.
I was going to say next year you're going to come out with another study that's going to say.
Yeah. I mean, they just do this.
It cuts your life short by yes. 5 years.
Yes. No doubt. I'm sure it will. But, you know, I remember when I talked about French press coffee and how it raised cholesterol. Well, I haven't drank French press coffee now in a year or so. So, you
know. Back to Starbucks, huh?
No, I go to my little local roaster and I just roast it but my local roaster roasts it, so it's always fresh. And then I just brew it the old-fashioned way.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
So I do listen.
I'm in that non-40... 54%, you know, I'm not a drinker. Just don't like it.
Do you drink tea?
Yeah, I love tea. Iced tea, especially.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
That's my vice. And it has more caffeine, so I imagine some of the same things you're saying are true.
Yeah. I think tea also has antioxidants as well, so who knows.
Well, I've got sort of three sort of semi-related funky things. I got an invitation, I guess last 2 weeks ago from somebody in our company who's looking for people to come play on the kickball team. And I went, what the? The kickball team? Shouldn't they be doing their job instead of organizing the kickball team?
Yeah.
And then doing more research into it, it turns out wiffle ball, dodgeball, and kickball are making a huge comeback as sports for adults.
Yeah, the park by me, Tietze Park, has kickball leagues, I've seen.
Right.
Kickball, which is something we played in grade school.
Playground sports offer an easier, cheaper, and more social athletic outlet than some traditional pastimes.
Dodgeball
like
seems kind of dangerous when you're older. I don't know.
Especially if you're pissed at someone. whack that ball. Shifting demographics and the poor economy have taken a toll on softball leagues, but those who run kickball, dodgeball, and wiffle ball leagues say they're booming.
Hey, softball doesn't cost that much, but you need a ball and a bat. What?
I mean, but you need skill, too. Whereas these other ones, you don't really need skill.
Okay.
Right? These aren't so much, you know, these are a little... the founder of the World...
They're social games.
Exactly. The founder of the World Adult Kickball Association had 7 teams in 1998, and now he's got 4,000 teams.
Wow.
We're
probably going to get calls from kickball people that say, what are you talking about, no skills?
There's still 3 million people who play softball, but these leagues are coming up because people can take one night a week out and they can de-stress from their adult life and they get a chance to be the gym class hero again. I like that. I thought that was the real reason. Yep. So adult leagues have been... because of especially big companies that have been affected by layoffs and company closings, all the adult leagues had taken a hit. But these now are coming back because they're relatively cheap. It's like $5 a night to actually go and do this. Yeah. And then you get to hang out and drink.
Right.
Yeah. And the other thing that's coming on strong, this is a subculture sport that's going to be the next mainstream sport. And perhaps you've heard of it. It's called parkour, P-A-R-K-O-U-R. It's a French word, it's slang for course. As in a course, like an obstacle course.
Huh.
It's part stunt, part sports, and definitely subculture. It's where it's an activity where participants mix extreme sports with acrobatics, turning urban landscapes into their jungle gyms.
Didn't Office do a parody of that?
I think it did. And also there's a bunch of commercials out now.
They're tumbling in and out of garbage.
Exactly.
You know.
It started in the French military as life-saving strategies to teach soldiers how to get from one place to another efficiently. And it has a close sibling called free running that's been popular in Europe for years. But now it's coming big to America. People who participate are called traceurs and traceuses.
Wow.
The male and the female version. So you jump, you vault, you somersault through the streets, an activity that looks more like a chase scene from a martial arts movie.
Right.
So that's right. What it is. And now there's companies like K-Swiss have released parkour sneakers, and gyms like Crunch in New York have become offering classes in it. And it's been seen in movies like Casino Royale, Live Free or Die Hard, or Paul Blart Mall Cop.
God, it's on Mall Cop. It must be popular.
Yeah. And starting this week, MTV is going to have MTV's Ultimate Parkour Challenge. So it's coming to May. Yeah. And in San Antonio, the nation's first official parkour park is actually being built. So
how do you play? I mean,
you get
points for more acrobatic you
are?
Well,
that's what they're going to do. And that's what the diehards are saying. They absolutely hate it. They're going to give... they're going to give money and prizes to the people who do it as fast as possible. But that wasn't the emphasis. And it was actually, it was designed as a discipline. And now they're making it more of a sport. And that's what some of the diehard people are saying. But here's a picture of the one in San Antonio.
Huh.
A little schematic drawing of what it's going to be.
Okay.
It looks like a giant jungle gym in my mind.
Right.
But... It's a practitioner's intention is to negotiate a particular environment, much like an obstacle course. They navigate around different kinds of objects during training. They jump. Actually, part of what they're going to do is try to keep troubled or at-risk youths off the streets and teach them something constructive. So it has some benefits. Interesting that it's coming out of Europe.
Right.
But it promotes fitness, self-confidence, mental clarity, camaraderie, and self-discipline. So you'll be seeing that soon. And the last thing you're going to see is, get this, a Magic 8-Ball movie.
Oh, God. Really?
It's coming. The Magic 8-Ball movie is coming. There's a Ouija board movie in development also. And, of course, we've had Transformers movies. There's a Battleship movie in development, a Monopoly movie, and a Stretch Armstrong. And now here comes the Magic 8-Ball.
I can't imagine how you make a movie out of a Magic 8-Ball, but I suppose...
Oh, they've hired two pretty big screenwriters that are going to write it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for those people who can't remember what the Magic 8-Ball is, it's the little plastic orb that looks like the 8-Ball in the billiard set. But it's filled with a liquid and a die, and you ask it a question, and then you turn it over, and it gives you an answer.
Like, ask again later. Or definitely. Maybe.
Yes. Absolutely not. Yeah, that's the Magic 8-Ball.
Probably not the best way to make decisions in your life.
It's with your Magic 8-Ball.
Well, that's interesting. So I have one little Facebook. I wrote this down. People are going to think I'm insensitive, but I just made
you
me.
You are, Jeff. You are so
made
insensitive.
Made me roll my eyes.
You are so insensitive.
So, you know, some friend on my Facebook was lamenting a romantic loss. And one of the comments was, sometimes we tend to be in despair when the person we love leaves us. But the truth is, it's not our loss, but theirs. For they left the only person who couldn't give up on them. Okay.
I think until they found another one, which was probably in their back pocket.
I think it's not our loss, but theirs. It's really not their loss. They chose to leave you.
It's less of a loss.
Right.
Loss to both, but it's a less of a loss to them.
That's right. And I know the reason I say I'm insensitive is because I know this person is just trying to make the person feel better. You know,
mm-hmm.
and that's great, nice. But also, I think if you do suffer a loss like that, you should say, "Yeah, I suffered a loss, and this sucks, and this hurts." Instead of just, you know, trying to make these phony rationalizations, you know, get through it. You have to identify the fact that you have a right to mourn a loss.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but
anyways,
to think
that's
that
all.
It's the other person's loss too. Well, yeah, they weighed that fact when they decided that they were going to end
it. They made the best plan for them.
That's
for
right.
Themselves.
It worked for them, and the loss wasn't all that big to them.
Right.
You know?
It did not weigh the benefits of making the move.
Moving the move.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's too bad though.
No, so that's why I didn't say anything, of course, in the Facebook thread, because I know it was a supportive statement, but it just made me roll my eyes a little bit, and I Made me cut and paste it. Put in the podcast. And Facebook, by the way, is just something that's starting to bore me more and more and more.
Oh, you know? I'm hearing that from across the board between Twitter and Facebook. Well, Come on, Twitter, you people.
Twitter, I tried. I think I told this podcast before. I tried for a month or so and realized there's really no value in this for me. Facebook, at least, has been a way of reconnecting. And sometimes I'll ask questions and get good stuff back. And, you know, but...
Do you remember MySpace? Do you remember MySpace when that was the hottest thing since sliced bread?
Yeah.
And now look at as one who's never jumped on any of those bandwagons, because I'm a really private person, I just don't feel I've missed a whole hell of a lot.
Yes, Miss Podcaster. Well, very really private person.
What I mean in terms
of social
networking, you're never going to find me on those. And then what's really funny is all these invasions of privacy and people, you know, what Facebook, aren't they making all the names available to their partners, right?
Yeah.
All their marketing partners. Well,
Facebook wants to become, and I get this, they want to become one of these, and this is, actually I have a whole article list of sort of techno trends for the year and coming up and... We don't have time right now, but some of these trends, I'm thinking, you know, how many people really got into this trend? I mean, we're talking about people like that do games or people that want to do social media and so forth. And I mean, come on, how many people do you know really, really that do Twitter, the twit? I mean, it's a nerd thing.
I know one person who did it. They did it really frequently. It was disrupting their marriage, actually.
Wow.
And it was always political, and it was always against Obama.
Yeah.
And there was a specific group of people that followed that person.
Yeah.
And now it's actually lost its appeal.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, after the big issues calm down, what do you Twitter about?
I mean,
really, if that was your whole point to be on there, was to Twitter about how bad Obama was.
Half of my Facebook comments, you know, statuses are, I don't want to say about some about God, but sometimes it's just like proverbs, like, to get up in the morning and feel good, it's going to be a great day. And I know they're doing it to get thumbs up. People can give them thumbs up and they're like 10 thumbs up for this comment. And I just roll my eyes and say, just shut the frick up.
But why are you on there checking that out?
Well, because I go to the page every now and then.
Page. This is your page.
Well, the Facebook.com page, and it shows you all the statuses. So I don't go spend that much time in there, but I see what the sort of the top status things are. But I'm doing that less and less, especially
status
as I'm
of the comments.
Right.
People's comments.
It kind of comes in as a scroll. So if you like log in like me every couple of days or so, you miss a lot of stuff, which is fine. You know. That doesn't really matter. What I was going to say is one of the trends is to get away from making people go to our website, like Twitter. Nobody really goes to Twitter.com. People twit using all kinds of different pieces of software, either on their iPhone or, you know, whatever, voice applications. The website itself there's hardly anything there on the website. And Facebook wants to be that way too. They want to be a ubiquitous way to... You know, ultimately, if you do a book review or a dining review on Yelp, they want that to show up automatically on your Facebook page. But somehow, for it not to be a page that people have to go to, they'll get their statuses in other ways and so forth. They want to be more ubiquitous. I don't know how exactly that works yet, but it's a trend. But that's the other thing that I find interesting. It's like, okay, yay, I can get all my reviews from Yelp and my book reviews and my movie reviews and all
reviews
this stuff.
Reviews that you've written?
Right, that I've written.
Okay.
But who does that really? I mean, you go to Yelp, and don't get me wrong, I'm applauding the idea, and I go to Yelp, I never write a review, but I look at reviews.
But why would you want to get your own reviews?
Huh?
Why do you want to get your own reviews if you know you wrote it?
So your reviews will show up on Facebook for other people to see reviews.
Oh, all right.
So it becomes one common place.
Got it, okay.
So people don't have to go into Yelp and so forth. But my point is, again, I think the audience for this is just a small number of people. How many people spend time writing Yelp reviews? Really not that many people, and not many of us really want to. You know, it's like an Amazon.com review.
That's an interesting point, because the people who are motivated to write, what is their motivation?
Right.
You know?
Right. It's just to be noticed.
Especially the ones that had a bad experience.
Right. Well, you get the people that want to bitch about it because they had a bad experience and it makes them feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got people who just want to be noticed. They just want to be noticed in cyberspace. You know, why do people twit? They want to be noticed.
Right.
But that's just a small percent. Most of us, regular, normal people, don't do this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So... All the they're talking about so many trends and this, and I'm a high tech and I'm geeky in my ways. And I'm sorry, I just don't see a lot of these trends affecting us affecting most of us. They're affecting just the sort of the techno geeks or the people that really, really want to be noticed in cyberland. That don't real, I don't know, that look for that. But anyways.
Well.
Anyways, more to that later.
So do you see a day when you won't be involved with Facebook?
Oh, I'll always have an account. I don't see any reason to not have an account, because you can manage it however you want to. I still like it. I've gotten lots of help on where to get this or what, you know, how to, just general advice things that is great, especially for local stuff in Dallas. I mean, otherwise general advice, you can use Google or Wikipedia and things, but yeah, sometimes it's nice to get friends' advice, and people are usually, if they see it, they're happy to give their opinion. So yeah, I mean, that's useful for that. And the other good, nice thing has been reconnecting with old high school friends and things like that. Now, the downside of that is I get people that I didn't know from high school's status updates when I log in, like what they, you know, the proverbial what I had for breakfast, are not always that dull, but it's like, you know, I'm glad that we're in contact. I don't care about your daily life, and it's not personal. I just, why would I care? I don't know you.
Because you haven't talked to you for 30 years.
Right.
Why do you care now?
I'm glad you're healthy. I'm glad you have kids. I'm glad you have a good, productive life. And yeah, it'd be great to see you at a reunion.
I'd love to see somebody from prison going, well, things didn't go so well. I was the star athlete in high school, and then I took a turn. And here I am in prison.
Facebooking.
Yeah, I'm Facebooking. I don't have a wife and two kids and the perfect job in the suburbs.
Right. And those people probably don't show up on Facebook.
No, they're not
really
showing up on Facebook. Although that must be why I'm not interested in Facebook.
Well, yeah, you're a little ashamed, aren't you?
Yeah, I've put my prison time behind me. I hate to mention that.
The black period. That was the dark period.
It was the dark period. Oh, man.
Well, that's really all the time we have for today.
Oh, wow, it's been fun. Sorry it's been so long, everybody.
Yeah, we'll try to make it more frequent next time. We always say that. It's just...
Jeff.
It's hard to... Yeah.
Jeff's working. He's so busy.
Yeah, it just takes a lot out of me. It really does. So until next time.
All right, listeners.
Say goodbye.
Say goodbye.
Bye.